Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Hello and welcome to Witch Bitches Review. I'm a magic sky butthole vortex come to suck your corpse back to the future. Phoenix Arcana Lightwood.
And I'm a heavily contested turkey no mayo sandwich caught in an epic battle between good and evil. Siren Rex Neenan. This is the podcast where two actual witches analyze representations of witchcraft in media and pop culture, beginning with our in-depth review of the original Charmed series.
So, as you guys definitely noticed in the introduction, I have changed my name. I did release a statement on my socials, but I wanted you guys to hear it from me in my own voice. Starting this show and being more public about my spirituality has really shown me, like, just how different of a person I am from who I was even just a year ago. Using my old name and being Tyler was not reflective of the phase of life I'm in at this point. Phoenix has always been my craft name or my magical name, and Arcana is reflective of my love and passion for the tarot, and Lightwood is inspired by a book series that I really love a lot. I decided to start using that name because it is more reflective of who I am as a person, as an artist, and as a witch. I've been hesitant to start using my new name for a few different reasons. The main one being that I didn't want to be insensitive to or take away from the experiences of trans individuals, as my name change was not a result of my gender identity. I realized shortly after, though, that a lot of my trans friends were my, like, main supporters in the decision to do so, and that sort of confirmed for me that it was the right time to do it.
I'm glad that you had that experience, because that's kind of what I would expect. I'm non-binary, which is under the trans umbrella. Okay. Can't kick me out. And I fully support anyone who wants to change their name for any reason. Period.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. You were one of the people that was one of my trans friends that was supportive of my name change. So
I'm pretty cool, so that tracks. Yeah.
Today we're talking about Charmed Season 1, Episode 8, The Truth is Out There and It Hurts.
Oh, this one actually has a good title. Finally.
For the first time in, like, forever.
Yeah. So, this title is a combination of two phrases, The Truth is Out There and Truth Hurts. Truth Hurts is pretty self-explanatory. This episode revolves around a spell that makes everyone the sisters come into contact with unable to lie, which, spoilers, it's going to hurt some feelings. And The Truth is Out There was the slogan for the popular sci-fi fantasy horror program The X-Files, which was running at the same time as Charmed. And the plot of this episode is very reminiscent of The X-Files.
According to IMDb, this episode ranked 8.2 out of 10, and that's pretty high, actually. That's really high. And it's the one where Prue decides she must find out how Andy will react to her being a witch, so she casts a truth spell. The 24-hour spell makes everyone around the sisters tell the truth, but is the truth really what they want to hear? The episode was written by Zach Estrin and Chris Levinson, and directed by James A. Cotner, who is a very popular director on Buffy as well.
For me, this episode marks a turning point in Season 1, where the episodes start to get really, really good. It's like, this is the point where the show gets past its, like, I don't know, awkward adolescent phase, and they sort of learn from all the missteps of the first 7 episodes and begin to show its true potential. Honestly, for the rest of Season 1, I think it's really good because it's really well written and well acted, and they aren't, like, super caught up in just showing what they can do with special effects the way that it gets somewhat in the later seasons. Mm-hmm. Phoenix and I are still going to be, like, super bitches and find something to read for filth, but you'll probably notice our criticisms from this point on will get markedly less harsh. That's not a promise. I don't know. I felt like a lie as soon as I said it.
I love the majority of this episode, honestly. There are a few moments that missed the mark for me in terms of, like, decisions that were made and some of the writing. The primary example for me, having once again the only black character in the episode killed off after like less than 2 minutes of screen time.
I know, I noticed that too, and I was so irritated.
It was so annoying, and that was like a really, like, could have been a really prominent character that they were just like, oh, he's dead.
And Daryl wasn't even in this one, so he literally was not the only black character.
Yeah, the only black character in this episode, just boop.
This episode utilizes a trope used occasionally in TV fantasy called either truth serum or cannot tell a lie. The trope has been used in Supernatural, Smallville, The Magicians, Kim Possible, and The Twilight Zone, just to name a few, as well as two later episodes of Charmed following this one. It was also the premise of the Jim Carrey film Liar Liar and a frequent aspect of the Wonder Woman mythology. Finally, the inability to stop telling the offensive truth was presented as a medical symptom in one episode of House. The truth serum trope tends to present the theory that the politeness of our social world is fueled entirely by lies, and that if people are forced to tell the truth, they tend to become mean and horrible, and horny. Charmed utilizes the trope with a soft touch, but the elements are definitely still there.
Yeah, for sure. This episode is also Prue's coming out episode, even though the memory of it is completely erased by the end. Phoebe uses the phrase in the episode, coming out of the broom closet. And I want to talk really quickly about where that phrase comes from. It's obviously a turn of phrase in reference to one often heard in the LGBTQ+ community. However, the phrase coming out of the closet is fairly new in both communities and had sort of a combined origin. Coming out was often used for a gay man being presented into queer society for the first time in a drag ball or the club scene, similar to, like, a debutante coming out party.
Dude, I did not know that. That is awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. And the of the closet part was added in reference to having, like, a skeleton in your closet or concealing a dark secret. So coming out of the broom closet is the same idea, but the broom bit is just like a clever craft reference. I think both the magical and LGBTQ+ communities are sort of drifting away from the coming out terminology just because I think that there's like less of a need or even a desire to do so. I think we all just want to exist without having it be like a whole thing, you know?
Well, I think that that's more contingent on how the outside culture reacts to a person telling them that they're queer. If we are reaching a point as a society where people no longer need to come out because it's not a big deal, then I don't want to stand in the way of that whatsoever. Brava. But I guess that kind of flies in the face of everything I learned as a millennial college student, I guess, where we used to talk about how, like, coming out was not a one-time action, but, like, a lifelong process, almost, where you had to repeatedly tell new people in your life whether or that you're queer or decide whether or not they needed to know.
I definitely understand where your point comes from. I guess just the way that I've noticed the progression, especially with, like, younger queer people, is there's just not as much of an emphasis on the coming out process. Mm-hmm. It's definitely been more of just a, oh, that's what this is, and then kind of going about their business, you know?
I mean, to me, that says that it's younger people are less worried about rejection and their whole life changing if people find out. And so to me, that is a good thing.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a step in the right direction, for sure.
But I'm also sure that it's still a very big thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I mean, it also depends on where you are and the way that your, you know, cultural and social surroundings are, just wherever you live. You know, I live in a pretty progressive metropolitan city, and it's been the first time in my whole life that I can go somewhere and not be, like, the only default queer person in a space. Like, I was working a shift at my job today, and every single person on the floor was a gay man.
Well, I mean, you work in a coffee shop, so...
That's true!
I think we should add that there are some people within the queer community that are not super comfortable with other communities using the phrase coming out, because they think that it minimalizes the struggle that queer people go through with coming mm-hmm. out. And in particular, I've heard queer people say that they don't love when witches, Wiccans, and pagans use the coming out of the broom closet phrase, because they feel like that just isn't a fair comparison. As someone who has come out of the gay closet and out of the broom closet to their family, I can tell you that the experiences were very similar. And honestly, I was more worried about the witch thing than the gay thing.
See, I didn't think that the witch thing was going to be as big of a deal in my family unit than the gay thing. But it definitely was, as we have talked about before. Yeah. I think that's definitely really important to talk about, and a really important comparison to make when we talk about coming out of the broom closet in reference to, you know, the queer experience.
I feel like what Prue goes through in this episode, what her motivations are and how she's feeling, is very similar to the experience of a queer person coming out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, she's afraid that someone she loves is going to reject her if they find out the truth, which is something that she didn't choose and can't change. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
That's a pretty even comparison.
Yeah, it's kind of a queer-coded episode.
A little
bit. Let's get into the scene by scene.
The episode opens in an underground parking lot. There's a well-dressed white man trying to walk to his car, and he gets approached by this super creepy guy. Creepy guy wants to talk about the man's scientific papers on cellular degeneration. The guy is a doctor. So Dr. Guy is super creeped out by the creep, as you would be.
Mm-hmm.
Then the creep references a paper that the doctor has not yet published and says that he's going to develop a vaccine. And the doctor is like, I just want to get in my car, dude. But instead, he gets killed, and we see a laser hit him in the forehead.
Honestly, this episode has anti-vaxxers just, like, quaking in their Ugg boots.
I know. Oh my god, the warlock is an anti-vaxxer. Son of a bitch. Oh, ew.
Oh, goodness. Outside a movie theater, Phoebe is playing with the magic eight ball, and Prue is like, you can see the future, you dumb bitch. And Piper says, ask it if Prue and Andy will get back together, but they refuse to show Prue what the answer says. Piper gets paged. Oh my god, a pager. There's so much, like, 90s tech lingo in this episode, and every time it happened, I was like, oh my god, how did people survive?
Yeah, can you explain to me, probably not, because you're younger than I am, but why is it that Piper gets paged and then pulls out a cell phone? Why do you need both?
That's probably why pagers are not a thing anymore. Because you do not need both.
Right? Like, why didn't they just call her? I don't understand. I don't understand.
I don't know. But she gets the page and complains about her job. And her sisters encourage her to just, like, tell off her boss and Piper calls him, and instead of telling him off the way her sisters told her to, she just agrees to go into work. Phoebe and Piper decides to use the buddy system to get to their car, which is very smart of them. But as they're on their way, Phoebe bumps into the killer and has a premonition of a woman being murdered by his laser. Now, I have a question. How is Phoebe supposed to know who the fuck that girl is? How is there any possible way she would be able to figure that out, like, at the start of the episode with just her premonition? Like, obviously, we get to a point where we see how it, like, comes together. But that's so random.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I get it. Like, she wasn't really meant to see it, probably, but she touched the killer. My question is, how did she not? I don't know. I guess I would be suspicious of the person who just touched me and then I had a vision of him.
Right?
I would be suspicious of that person. But he was like a white guy in a suit. So, like, God, that could be anybody.
True. Very true. After she has this premonition, they hear the sound of police sirens and they decide to follow it. And they get to the body of the doctor. And Phoebe says she foresaw the next murder, but there's actually another one in between the one that she saw and this one. But anyway, Prue shows up And, like, she runs up behind them, but the way that it's shot sort of makes it seem like she was already there. The corpse in this scene, the eyes are, like, normal, but later on, all of the victims have, like, eyes drained of color, so that's really inconsistent.
Well, and Andy will say that all of the victims had their eyes drained of color.
They did not, as we...
Even though this guy doesn't. I really love the song that plays after the credits in this one, because... The line that it begins with is one more murder in this town. And we're at episode 8, and I don't know, just the way it is, it's just very like, oh my god, someone else has been killed. And if I were the Charmed Ones, that's kind of how I would be feeling right about now. like we just became witches, like how many dead people are there gonna be? And the answer is a lot more.
So many more.
So after this, you know, during the song, I guess, rather, the Charmed Ones are getting ready for their day in the kitchen. Prue asks if her coffee is leaded, and Piper says always is. Leaded here is some kind of 90s slang for caffeinated.
Here's the thing. I work at a coffee shop, and I have no fucking idea what that means.
I've literally never heard anyone ever say that except for Prue in this episode.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense. And here's, like, people say... the weirdest shit about their coffee. If you're gonna come through the drive-thru at a coffee establishment and order a bold...
I guess I prefer my coffee italic. I don't know.
It took me a second.
It, like, Tyler, that was not that funny.
Hold on, though. I heard what you said, and then I was like, oh, that was funny. And then it, like, clicked what you actually said. Okay, let's move forward in this scene.
Anyway, Piper knocks over Phoebe's cereal, freezes it in time, and then moves a trash can for the cereal to fall in, even though she could have just, I don't know, saved money and resources by plucking the cereal out of the air and putting it back on the counter. But whatever, I guess they just wanted to show off her power.
I guess.
I don't know. Well... whatever. Leo walks in and says that he's still constantly remodeling their entire house for some reason.
Ugh, Phoebe and Piper are still fighting over Leo, and Prue is like, y'all are dumb as fuck. And Phoebe's like, anyway, I gotta go save that one bitch, but I don't know who she is. And Piper says that they'll call a truce, and Prue says that Phoebe only likes Leo because Piper does, i.e. that she is a slut.
She's a boyfriend-stealing slut.
Yeah, she's a boyfriend-stealing slut. Prue and Phoebe discuss her, like, vague vision of this murdered woman. And Phoebe says that Prue needs to go see Andy to talk to her about her vision. And Prue is like, why would I do that? Prue goes to the attic instead of going to talk to Andy to check the Book of Shadows. And the book, like, magically flips to the truth spell. And Prue's like, what the fuck? And turns the page, but the book turns back, and Prue is like, this is useless, I don't know what you're trying to tell me, so I'm going to close the book and leave.
The book is very persistently suggesting that she cast the spell. Okay, so anyway, at Quake, Piper is, like, having a day, okay, and her boss sucks. Her boss's name is Martin, and he says he's been gone for 3 weeks, but we're all sort of like, who the fuck is this guy? Because isn't Piper the manager? And then if he's, like, supposed to be a replacement for Chef Moore, even though he's completely not French or a chef, it's very confusing.
Who knows?
Anyway, the only thing we're really certain of about Martin is that he is a bitchy homosexual. And he sucks. And Piper really wants to tell him that he sucks, but she can't because she's a scared.
Piper is kind of spineless for most of this episode, and I just don't care for that character regression for her.
Well, it's who she is in the beginning, really. Like, she's like that until she hits her breaking point, which she would have done regardless of the events of this episode.
At Buckland's, Phoebe comes to steal Prue's laptop, and, like, the way that she's like, chat room saved my life, is so 90s.
It is. And I, like, yes. Like, is it just a thing, or did, like, all of us in the 90s and 2000s, like, survive on chat rooms and strangers who, like, totally got us because our parents didn't? Or was that just, like, me being an emo kid?
I feel like it's a pretty common experience for people who were a little bit more tech savvy in the late 90s and early 2000s than I was as a 3 to 7 year old.
Well, I guarantee you, if you were a gay witch in the 90s and 2000s, chat rooms probably did save your life. Okay. That was my experience.
Phoebe says that she talked to Daryl and he told her that they don't have any information about the case. Phoebe thinks that Andy looks devastated and she advises Prue to tell Andy that she's a witch. And Prue is like, you dumb bitch. Right after Phoebe leaves, Tanya shows up and surprise, surprise, the random background character that we've never seen before is the girl that Phoebe is supposed to save. She gives Prue, Tanya, the random girl that we've never seen before today, Tanya gives Prue her favorite sandwich, and that's the end of the scene, right?
Well, I guess, like, sells Prue her favorite sandwich. She has an interesting job where she walks around an office building and barges into people's offices and sells them sandwiches.
I don't understand what kind of gig that is.
Which maybe is a thing. I've never worked in an office building.
Oh, another thing that Phoebe says in this episode that's really funny to me is surf the web. When she first walks in, who fucking says that anymore?
No, that's legit slang though, yeah.
I mean, sure. It was. I don't think it is anymore.
My question about this scene is how did, like, Tanya walk in right after Phoebe left and they, like, didn't run into each other in the hallway?
And they didn't see each other at all?
Yeah. Phoebe was like, I'm desperate to save this girl. Anyway, I have to look precisely at the floor as I leave you.
I don't know. That's a really good... Maybe they came from different directions.
Yeah, okay, sure. The bitch is, like, hauling a box of sandwiches, and you don't notice her. Maybe I just gravitate toward food. I don't know.
I mean, same, though. I think the sisters' chemistry is getting markedly better as the show is going on. I think this episode is a prime example of the fact that, like, these actresses are getting to know each other a little better because the chemistry between the sisters, I feel like, is really good in this episode.
It is. And it also wasn't, like, so forced, I guess, yeah. By the writing.
It wasn't like, Phoebe, you always do this. It was...
It was
so much more natural feeling to me.
Yeah. All right, so that night back at the manor, Prue decides that she is going to cast the truth spell after the Book of Shadows badgers her again. Phoebe and Piper come home without her knowing, which is crucial because the spell affects everyone in the house. So the spell says that for the next 24 hours, everybody currently in the house will tell the truth and be told the truth. And at the end, everyone involved will forget, which is also not true. The truth spell lied to us. Yeah. Downstairs, Piper and Phoebe are talking. Piper lies and says that she confronted her boss, which she totally did not. And Phoebe lies and says that Piper's zit isn't that bad, which actually isn't a lie because Piper does not have a zit. It's not there. It's imaginary. Anyway, so Prue finishes the spell, and now all of them are affected by the truth spell. So after that, Phoebe's like, oh my god, your zit is huge. And then we hear this little chime to let us know that the spell is working. Of course, it's not, because Piper doesn't have a fucking zit. Because they could not commit.
They could not.
To her acne. And then Piper admits that she chickened out and did not go off on her boss at all because he is a scary, bitchy homosexual.
Misspelled.
So this brings us to Misspelled, yeah!
This is the segment where we examine the validity of the Charmed One's spells and talk about how a real witch might accomplish the same thing. Siren, how do you think this spell stands up?
Well, I think this spell functions as an excellent plot device in the episode. There are aspects of it that a real witch would never include. I mean, like, obviously at this point, the Charmed Ones are not writing their own spells. They're just going off what's been prepared for them. But, like, if I were going to do a spell like this, I would never include the fact that I would also be forced to tell the truth. That might sound a little bit bitchy, but I wouldn't. Well, it's detrimental. I mean, it negatively affects the caster. For some people, that might make sense in terms of balance. Like, if I expect to be told the truth than to honor the spell, I have to also be telling the truth. I guess I get that. But I would never include something in my own spell that forced me to do something, you know?
Yeah.
And then focusing the spell on the people in the house instead of either yourself or the particular person you suspect is lying to you, that just seems overly complicated, which in the context of this episode, guess what? It is. In general, witchcraft works best when you are as specific as possible, not when you add a bunch of confusing and unnecessary elements, but, you know, that's what makes good TV sometimes.
Truth spells are actually not a super common topic in witchcraft, so what we've come up with is really a lot of, like, sparse and unrelated information. According to Scott Cunningham's Encyclopedia of Crystal, Gem, and Metal Magic, wearing an amulet of agate can help ensure that you always tell the truth. According to the Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells by Judica Illes?
I am not sure. I think it's Judica Illes.
Judica Illes. Sorry if we butchered your name. You're probably not listening to this podcast, but I'm very sorry, Judica. Burning the herb of copal will force liars to reveal the truth. And the Roman goddess Veritas, who was depicted as a villain in Supernatural's Truth episode, how offensive, could be invoked in spells to obtain the truth.
Somewhat offensive, yes, but also, in my opinion, she is the, like, one of the greatest Supernatural villains, so that's why I wanted to include her in this. She is a real goddess of the truth, and was thought to have the power to force people to tell the truth. And her character in her Supernatural episode was absolutely fabulous, and I was rooting for her the whole time, is all I can say about that.
I mean, every time Supernatural includes a pagan god of any kind, they are evil, which I just find incredibly problematic.
That's true, and honestly, we could do a whole fucking episode on that. Anyway, off topic. Okay, so, the only truth spells that I could find in my personal witch library both fell under the subset of domination spells, which is definitely a moral gray area for some. They could also be treated as binding spells, preventing someone from lying, taking away their ability to lie, which again, for a lot of people, is a moral gray area. Either way, those spells were written as being directed at a specific person, not like everybody in your house. The truth spells I found online all seemed to be homebrew and had almost nothing in common, which to me said that since there aren't a lot of traditional tools and aspects associated with this type of spell, that witches who are writing this type of spell are feeling comfortable just coming up with their own ideas.
I've never really seen a spell like this either. I know a lot of spells to, like, stop the spread of lies or to keep someone from gossiping about you, some of which include elements like tying a cow's tongue with twine after filling it with pointy shit, which I would never do. Not because I denounce using animal parts, but because that's fucking nasty.
It's a bit much.
It's a lot.
That's interesting because it's not in our outline, but we did kind of have the same thought that the closest actual witchcraft application to this would be like spells to stop gossip, which is an actual thing in some traditions.
I had originally thought when approaching this episode that I had adapted this spell, but it actually turns out I have the to hear a secret thought spell. But in real life, I think that these two spells would function in pretty similar ways. Obviously, it would be pretty difficult to force the truth out of someone, but you could do a working to, like, heighten your intuition, to be more aware of dishonesty, or to create a situation where the truth can be discovered.
That makes sense.
This is how I personally would go about doing something like this. I wanted to include, like, the steps that I would actually take if I were gonna do this spell. I would start initially with, like, a blue or purple candle, as those are both associated with water or spirit and intuition. Or maybe a white candle, because that works for pretty much whatever and they're easy to find. I would incorporate something that I associate with the situation, as well as the moon and high priestess tarot cards. Because in my personal practice, I use tarot cards a lot in my spellcraft, because as a tarot reader, I'm able to, like, sort of focus what their vibrations are into the spell that I'm working. And those both have to do with, like, strong intuitive associations, associations with secrecy or things not being as they seem, and things coming to light. As far as the incantation goes, I'm okay with how this is worded, but I really think more details would probably be required.
Definitely.
For it to work. Or, you know, you could just be like, why the fuck you lying? Why you always lying? Stop fucking lying. But, you know, whatever works
beautiful.
For you.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Did you have anything else to add?
No, other than that, I think it's really cool that you use tarot cards in spell casting, because so do I.
It just is like, it just steps that pussy game up, you know?
The card that I would use would be the Ace of Swords.
Ooh, that'd be good.
Because that card is actually often referred to in tarot manuals as the Sword of Truth.
Misspelled.
So anyway, after she casts the spell and, you know, unknowingly affects her sisters, Prue calls Andy, but he doesn't answer. So she leaves him a message saying that she wants to talk to him in the next 24 hours. Because she gonna tell him she's a witch.
At some random-ass research lab after the truth spell scene, a lab tech is doing some, like, science-y stuff. And then the creepy anti-vaxxer shows up and says that the scientist is going to help Zimbabwe grow crops and talks about what he will
do
in the future.
Can we talk about the way that, like, he just shows up and he's like, ah, Zimbabwe. What the fuck was that?
I don't know.
I can't, it was just really creepy. He's such a creep.
It is very creepy, and I just made, like, kind of a connection in my brain. He comes in, and his opening line is Zimbabwe. To the only black character right. in the episode. I just hate this. First of all, Phoebe is like, oh, I think I saw the next murder. No, you didn't. The powers that be just saw fit to completely skip over this.
This intelligent, educated black man who was trying to change the world with science to make it easier for people to live. That guy, not important. It's fine.
Yeah. Whatever. Stupid. God, it's so annoying. I'm so upset that this scene is in here the way that it is. I'm not upset that a black actor got work. Good for him. I'm really upset with the writing team of this episode for including one person of color and then immediately killing
them. Well,
it's
actually, it would be sort of hard to tell who is to blame because writers don't necessarily have any decision on casting.
True.
So they may not have written into the script, you know, black scientist gets murdered. Someone made the decision that it should be this guy. And like Phoenix said, yeah, like, we always want, like, actors of color to get work. The problem is just that they so seldom in this time period got leading roles. And when they did get roles at all, they often got killed. And unfortunately, actors of color are going to continue to die in minor roles in this show.
Here's the thing. When we're talking about who to blame, I feel like it's on sort of both parts. Well, obviously there's nothing wrong with referencing a region in Africa. That's not what I'm saying. I feel like maybe the casting decision was partly because there was a reference to a region in Africa, so they cast
because only a black person could care about helping a region in Africa. That's what you're getting at. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So as this scientist, who I don't believe we get the name of, they have a struggle and the lab technician rips a button off of the anti-vaxxer's coat.
I love that we're calling him the anti-vaxxer now.
I just feel like that's an episode title right there. Then his third eye opens and he kills the lab technician with a laser. I wish I could shoot a laser beam out of my
fucking pole. I do too. Do you ever, like, pretend that you're Cyclops from the X-Men when someone's, like, pissing you off?
All the time.
I'm so glad it's not just me. Okay, so the next morning, the sisters are doing the exact same shit. Except now they can't lie. So, Prue asks if the coffee is leaded. Which, by the way, does she ask that every morning? And because that to me says that she is suspicious that Piper is lying about her coffee. Or just like a really annoying nag. And maybe you should just make your own goddamn caffeinated coffee, Prue. But the point is, right. Piper says, no, your coffee is not leaded. It's unleaded because Phoebe and I are unleaded cars. I don't get the terminology. She says nobody else drinks diesel.
I don't know.
Coffee
I don't get
is
it.
Akin to petroleum. The point is, Piper says, no, your coffee is not caffeinated because you suck and I don't like you. And then Phoebe walks in and says that she was up all night on the internet, and she apologizes for making fun of Piper's non-existent zit, but then tells her it's huge again, which, I will die on this hill, is a lie. Piper does not have a zit. It's a lie.
I do want to say, when Phoebe walks into the room, her exact line is, don't give me grief when you get the phone bill. I was up all night on the internet. I forgot that dial-up was a thing. I literally, like, I have never had it. I've never experienced it. And so the fact that this was a thing just boggles my fucking mind.
Oh, no, it was for real. My mom used to yell at me to get off the internet so she could use the phone. Or sometimes she would yell at me to get off the internet because she was expecting
a
call.
Oh my god.
Like, we were living in the dark.
I don't know
ages.
How people survived. I'm so glad that I was not a computer user in this time frame. God damn it.
Well, just imagine you're like in your bedroom trying to look up gay porn, and then suddenly your mother is slapping on the door because she's expecting a call from the preacher. Like, it's just insanity. It was a nightmare.
It sounds awful, and I'm so sorry that you experienced such a thing. All of my gay porn ventures were very quickly ended by clicking the X button when my mom walked into the room to see if I was okay.
Yeah, I've been through a lot.
You've had a really hard time.
You know, my door didn't even lock back then. My doorknob was shaped like a fish. True. It's literally true.
Oh god, where even are we anymore?
Okay. All right. Anyway, Leo walks in and says, "Hey, I am literally still remodeling your house, and anyway, I'm going to go do that." And then Phoebe just looks at Piper and she says, "We both know the only reason I like Leo is because you do." And then everybody is like, "What the fuck?" And Prue is like, "Well, I've got to go." And Piper and Phoebe chase after her and they are like, "You stupid bitch. What did you do?" And Prue admits that she cast the truth spell.
Prue says that she talked to Andy and Phoebe is like, "Woohoo!" And Piper's like, "God damn it." And Piper wants to undo the spell, but that's not possible because it's on until 8 p.m., which is another thing that I would never fucking do to myself. I would never include a, like, time frame on a spell.
And do you know what? I just don't see that really working. I mean, I'm going to offend everyone who's into numerology right now. And the truth is, I don't care. But I just see time as, like, this fake human social construct, like, the numbers of hours and shit. And I don't know, I just feel like you can't, like, go out into the universe and be like, this will happen precisely at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the universe will be like, okay, sure, I'll put it in my agenda. You know? It's not like that.
No, I mean, as you said in a previous episode, that's, like, taking something fun like magic and adding something boring like math.
Ew, math, yeah.
Nobody likes that. No, I mean, there are some people that like that. If you like math, I'm sorry, and you're probably really sad. But
they're probably used to it.
Prue says,
which means until 8 o'clock tonight, everybody who comes into contact with us will have no choice but to speak the truth.
What do you mean, no choice?
Exactly that. Ask me a question. I'm game. Prue, what do you think of me? While I admire your confidence and your fearlessness, your utter lack of responsibility frustrates me to no end. Oh, God, that is so enough.
Oh, my God, this could be very dangerous. I'm kind of digging it. Piper, what do you really think of your boss? I think he's a self-serving jerk who must have a very small penis.
Oh, my God, I'm going to be so fired.
No.
Phoebe's like, oh, shit, I'm going to go interrogate the cops.
I love that that's, like, Phoebe's, like, go-to reaction there. Because, and she is, like, the, like, reckless, like, screw-uppy one, but also, like, the brave one. And I love that she's like, I'm under a spell. I know. I'm going to go force police officers to reveal information to me. Yes, that's what I'm going to do with this. I'm going to take off right now. With no preparation, I just came up with this idea. And then her sisters are like, yeah, do that. Yeah, no, do it.
Well, I mean, I feel like it would be different if they didn't know a cop, you know? If they didn't know Andy, I feel like that would be less of a smart plan.
Right, but they're sending her to talk to Andy. She can't lie, even though Prue's really worried about the way he's going to find out that they're witches. It's okay for Phoebe to go and talk to him, knowing that she can't lie, and they're going to talk about something that relates to witchcraft.
You've got it.
Yummy.
You've got a point. You've got a point.
I know.
Phoebe goes to the police station and corners Andy and tells him to talk to Prue first and foremost. And then Phoebe gets the deets on the murder, and Andy just, like, spills all the tea. All of the tea. It's piping hot and all over the fucking floor. Two Vicks, cauterized wounds on the forehead, eyes drained of color, but not all of them. Not all of them. No suspects. Evidence. There's a button made of an unknown alloy. And then Andy starts to ask a question, and Phoebe's like, shut up, go make out with Phoenix. And then we're done with the scene.
So now Prue is at work, and Andy calls her. Prue says she wants to meet in person, and they agree to meet around 5. Tanya comes in with Prue's sandwich, but then Hannah shows up and steals it. Now, I know we haven't mentioned them in this episode, but of course we're talking about Hannah, Prue's, probably demon coworker. She hangs out with Rex, Prue's probably demon boss. Okay. So Prue says, Hannah, don't you hate turkey? And Hannah says, yeah, I just don't want you to have it. And then Prue asks why she's such a bitch, and Hannah says, it's my mission in life to destroy you. Which is a pretty big foreshadowing here to what's going to happen in the next 2 episodes. Because this is, of course, Hannah telling the absolute truth that she means to destroy Prue.
Yeah.
Prue takes that comment seriously later. But she just kind of shrugs it off. Right now.
Literally no suspicion that she might be a demon.
Right. She's just like, oh, she just doesn't like me because she's a stupid redheaded twat. So Prue's boss Rex walks in and he's like, ah, this is awkward. Hannah, could you walk over here so I can yell at you? Wink. And Tanya, the sandwich girl, is just kind of looking back and forth like,
whoa, I just wanted you to have your turkey sandwich.
I love being in that situation that Tanya is in, where you are right there watching people fight, but you're not in it, but you, like, get a front row seat. Oh, I love it.
Rex confronts Hannah and tells her not to be such a stupid bitch all the time. And Hannah is like, well, I really fucking hate her. And then Rex pulls out a cigar and Hannah is like, let me just spit all over the end of this and set it on fire.
Let me do a sexy blow on your cigar.
And then we realize, oh, she's a demon.
Oh my god, she's a demon. I had no idea. Piper is at home. She's on the phone with her scary, bitchy, homosexual boss, Martin, who expects her to do everything. He expected her to do inventory at home. Do you know that that's impossible? Leo walks in and he has spilled something on his shirt, but for some reason he doesn't just, like, pull it off. Why do you have the hot guy spill something on his shirt if he's not gonna take it off? I don't understand. Oh, because this episode was written by 2 men. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Bummer.
Yeah. Anyway, so then Piper is like, hey, do you, like me or whatever? And Leo says she has beautiful eyes. And then Piper asks how Leo feels about women who make the first move. And he says he's still waiting on it to happen. And Piper's like, well, guess what? We're gonna make out. So Piper and Leo are, like, so a thing right now.
They're so a thing right now.
Who saw that coming?
Literally nobody.
Certainly not Phoebe. And she's supposed to be a psychic.
At Buckland's, Rex asks Prue how she is, and she almost tells him that she's a witch, but Phoebe interrupts, thank God. Phoebe walks by Tanya and has her exact same vision again, but loses her in the elevator. And then the anti-vaxxer shows up, and confronts her in the elevator and says all of these really creepy things to her in front of all of these other people.
It was like, okay, if I were in that elevator, well, I would probably get murdered by the anti-vaxxer because I would not expect the whole third eye laser thing. But if I was in that elevator and I saw this guy saying to a woman, you're really difficult to find, always around other people, never staying in the same place, I would be like, dude, back the fuck off. Of all the things, he's like, oh, I will finally confront you in this crowded elevator instead of waiting until you get off the elevator and are alone. But do you know, I can tell you that anti-vaxxers don't really think things through.
They're not the smartest of people.
And you just cannot give them advice.
Phoebe finds the anti-vaxxer trying to kill Tanya in the parking lot, and she grabs a bottle out of Tanya's spilled livelihood and breaks it over the top of his head and just really does a number on him. And it does enough that they can get to Tanya's car and drive away. Because apparently the anti-vaxxer can time travel, but he can't drive.
They don't have cars in the future. They just use all their new metal to make buttons.
And then Prue comes out for just long enough for the demon to be like, who dat? And then we're in the next scene.
All right, so Phoebe has taken Tanya back to her house. She's on the phone with her husband, who is out of town. And then she asks Phoebe what the hell's going on. Phoebe tells her she's in danger and they have to hide. Tanya asks what that guy was, and since she's on the truth spell, Phoebe has to answer and she can't lie to her. So she says, that was a demon. And Tanya is like, girl, bye. But somehow Phoebe convinces her to stay by just elaborating on all the supernatural death details. Yeah, it just really calmed her down, I guess.
I mean, I always find that incredibly calming when someone tells me how all of the people who were murdered by the person that is after me died.
I guess I've never been in that exact situation, but I would just assume that Phoebe was like a grifter trying to get my wallet. Like she did to that other guy she almost killed.
Yeah, like she did to that boring white guy from a couple episodes ago. At Quake, Piper is stressed and Martin comes in and gives her more work to do. And Piper is like, actually, I have a family emergency. And Martin is like, no, you don't. And Piper asks how she's supposed to do all of the work. And Martin's like, I don't know, figure it out. And Piper's like, I quit. She takes her apron off and she throws it at her boss. And I don't hate my current boss, but I really thought about doing that at one of the previous places I worked at. Just like taking my apron off and throwing it in his face.
I think we all fantasize about rage quitting just like every day.
Yeah.
I do it all the time.
If only.
The day comes that I finally quit, I am going to figure out how to make it hurt someone. I don't care who, but someone.
It's not worth it if it's not painful. And that can be applied to many different areas of life, like what I'm going to do
oh my God.
With Andy later. Oh, let's talk about the next scene.
Oh my God. So, the demon, warlock, anti-vaxxer is stalking Prue at Buckland, but Andy shows up. And this is another incident of, like, the demon being somewhat alarmed by the appearance of a police officer.
Yeah. Just,
these fucking pansy-ass demons. Am I right?
I mean, I don't know that he knew that Andy was a cop, just that there was another person in the room. But obviously, that's not going to deter him because he just tried to fucking attack Tanya in an elevator full of people. What is this demon's deal?
He's just very inconsistent, sort of like anti-vaxxer science and logic. Ow! Okay, so Andy goes into Prue's office and he's like, I miss you. And Prue's like, okay, well, I just have to show you this one thing. So she uses her telekinesis to make her paperweight slide across her desk. And she tells Andy that she's a witch. And Andy is like, mind blown.
Okay, but Andy, the witch expert from episode one, had no fucking idea.
Right.
Had no idea how.
That's pretty inconsistent too, because you would think that he would get right back onto his Wikipedia and like Google search my girlfriend is a witch or something.
I feel like he like wouldn't that. Even be able to put that together. He would be like, girl, crime scene, witch, like I don't feel like it would be a cohesive thought for Andy.
I don't know. But anyway, just toward the end of the episode, it seems like he's put, like, no thought or research into it whatsoever.
No!
She explains that because she's a witch, that's why she's always disappearing and why she's always involved in crime scenes. Andy is like, I did not see this coming. And there's a really stupid moment where Andy asks if her kids will be witches. And Prue says, yes, if they're girls. You dumb bitch. Whatever, I'm gonna let it go because I've railed against it so many fucking times already. But you can be a witch regardless of your gender, y'all. No matter what gender that is, all of which are valid. Okay, so Andy asks if she can give it up, if she can give up being a witch, and she says, no, I can't, even though that's actually a plot point two episodes from now, which means that Prue just lied. And Prue asks if Andy can accept all of this, and Andy says, bitch, I do not know. You're gonna need to give me, like, a minute.
You know, this scene is kind of relatable.
It's totally relatable. And for the witch thing, but also for the queer thing, like we mentioned before, it's totally relatable.
Yeah.
Especially the part where he asks if she can, like,
change,
give it up or change, quit it. Yeah. Like, that part. I think we've all dealt with that.
I've dealt with that from the witch thing and the gay thing.
Same.
Neither one of those things would I even want to change, even if I could. What would you say to, like, a young witch or a young gay person that was in the situation?
Oh, gosh. Well, a lot of people don't want to come out to their families while they're still financially dependent on them. And I think if you have that feeling that it could go wrong for you, that you should trust it. I mean, it's a no-win situation when you're looking at either hiding who you are or being cast out and possibly even homeless. There's no winning there.
No.
I mean, I would recommend that you keep yourself physically safe and in a home until you can get out on your own with your own means. But that doesn't mean that there aren't going to be psychological damages that you endure in that situation. Pretending to be someone you're not for a long period of time is extremely painful, especially when you know that it's because people who are supposed to love you will reject you if they find out who you really are. That's awful.
There's no easy answer for what to do.
I guess that was very negative, but I do have a piece of helpful advice, and that is, find a way to find a community somewhere else. When I was living at home and I was a gay witch and I knew that my family could not accept it, that was when chat rooms literally did save my life. I was involved in this MSN group that had nightly chats. It was called A Witch's Home, and it was a fantastic escape for me. And I met so many people on there who became such great friends for a long time, people I could actually talk to about stuff I was going through when I couldn't talk to my family. I think that things like that are even easier now with, like, Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and every other social media platform that keeps popping up. I think it's a lot easier to find your tribe online, and they can't be there with you for everything, but they certainly can make you feel less alone. And quite honestly, that still applies to me as an adult. I mean, Phoenix is one of the people that has become so important to me over the past 2 years, and we've never even met in person.
Aww.
But you're still one of my best friends.
You're one of my best friends. That's so nice. I don't have anything to say now because that was just very sweet and well-rounded.
Yeah, well, like I've mentioned, I'm kind of awful.
You are pretty awesome. I am very thankful for the way that our paths crossed and how they have continued to intertwine. And everything that Siren just talked about is absolutely true. And the people that truly love you and will care about you and support you are not going to care if you are a big old gay or a big old witch. It's just not going to matter.
I will like you more if you're a gay witch. I'm just throwing that out.
I mean, same. Let's be friends. Find us on our socials. And I mean, we'll be there for you. If you're in a situation where this is happening to you or you feel unaccepted, you have a home with the two of us. Reach out to us. All right. Tanya in the next scene is flipping through the Book of Shadows, finding nothing. And you found a pretty interesting piece of information that the book that she's reading from is not real. It's not the real Book of Shadows. The other one was being repaired during filming. Do we know what happened to the book? Did you find any information on that?
I don't. I couldn't find more than that. Just that they strategically, like, angled the shot and the way that she held it so that you wouldn't see too much of it and that you couldn't see the cover.
Oh.
But I guess she was just thumbing through this, like, blank book. Oh,
bummer.
I know that, like, all of the pages of the Book of Shadows were hand-painted. So every time they would add a new spell for an episode, they would have to add that page to the book. So it could have been something to do with that.
Oh, yeah, like, they had to, like, rebind the book every time?
I believe, okay, I'm not certain of this, but I believe that it was similar to a binder, but, like, the spikes that hold the pages in were, like, hidden in the binding of the book. So you couldn't, like, see the ring. So I'm pretty sure it's the kind of book that you could take apart and add a page to.
It was like a post-bound book. Yeah, there are lots of tutorials on how to make those. And I have tried to make them, but I do not understand the process. So I stick to my 3-ring binder and I glue leather to the outside. But Phoebe touches Tanya and has a vision of her holding a baby. And I'm just really kind of done with Tanya in this episode. I don't want to talk about her anymore. She's so boring.
Oh my god.
Congratulations, you ruined your life. Oh my god. I just don't want to deal with her anymore.
She is carrying the future of defeating anti-vaxxers.
Congratulations, Tanya. I still would have rather had a whole story about the black lab technician.
Okay. Well, if you're going to say it like that, this is a little bit, you know, white unborn children matter more than grown black men, I guess. you could maybe make that connection.
A little
upsetting. Okay, so anyway, so Phoenix is really bored with the
fact I'm just that bored with Tanya. I don't want to talk about her anymore. I get that she's the innocent. I get we have to save her. But I would so much rather just forget about her and just deal with the problem, you know?
Okay. Well, anyway, so now that Phoebe knows that she's pregnant, she figures it out. Like, oh my god, the anti-vaxxer is from the future, where apparently they still have anti-vaxxers, which is
weird. We don't know what year. We don't know how far in the future.
We don't know what year, but it could be this year, because we do still have anti-vaxxers in this year. So there's a button with made of an unknown metal. There's no reference to him in the Book of Shadows, and there's a baby no one knows about, and oh my god, he's from the future, and oh shit, he saw me with Prue.
Prue is having an existential crisis, so she picks a fight with Hannah, having no idea that Marty McFly is on his way to kill her. Prue is the last one out of the office, except for the anti-vaxxer, and Prue is getting ready to leave when he walks in, and he's like, "Have you heard about polio? Love it."
Shut up!
No. Okay. So anyway, long story short, the anti-vaxxer is there to try to get information from Prue, but Prue actually uses this handy dandy truth spell that she's cast for just today on the demon to figure out what is going on. And he's like, "I want to kill that baby," which is definitely not something that an anti-vaxxer would talk about, because they are not about hurting the unborn.
Typically not. No. We should mention, though, that when the demon first walks in, he asks Prue where, like, Phoebe and Tanya are, and Prue says she doesn't remember, which is a flat-out fucking lie.
Oh, so she did, didn't lied. She? It does sort of seem, though, yeah, that the spell is not quite as effective if they are focused on something else or quickly distracted after the question is asked. Because Phoebe has that premonition of Tanya holding the infant, and Tanya is like, what? And Phoebe's about to say something, and then Piper stops her, or something happens, and she doesn't answer the question. So I would assume that maybe if, like, Prue is more focused on, like, how the fuck do I get out of here? Or is, like, I need to make my next move right now. Maybe the spell wouldn't have time to, like, click. But that's... It's a bit of a stretch, I know.
No, I just don't agree with that. No, because, like, everyone else, as soon as they ask them a question, they're forced to answer. He asks her a question, and she lies. And she says, I don't remember. And, like... I don't remember. I don't recall. Well, if I learned anything from watching Scandal, it's that that's what you say when you're on trial and you're trying not to, like, condemn.
Maybe herself. She really didn't know where they were. Maybe she didn't know.
She knew.
Anyway, we get the reveal that he's after Tanya's baby and he's from the future, which we learned already from before, but now Prue has to know. And Prue is like, I don't want polio. And she throws her desk at the anti-vaxxer and runs away.
Because all the people he's killing are apparently going to make a vaccine in the future, not against polio, because we already have that. You know, some people just aren't getting it.
They're going to make a vaccine against his third eyeball, apparently.
Which doesn't make any sense. Because I don't want to give in to anti-vaxxer rhetoric by saying that vaccines don't work. But I'll tell you what vaccines don't do, and it's protect you from laser. Like, that's not a thing.
You're correct. They do not protect you from laser beams. Only tinfoil hats do that. And mirrors.
Yeah, and mirrors.
Duh. Piper can't reach Prue on the phone, though, and they get really panicked. And Piper has to go to Buckland's by herself. And this is not something that she is super chill with at first. But Phoebe's like, can't always be the power of three. And thank God there wasn't another power of three spell that Prue had to do by herself, essentially.
She has to do everything by herself.
At least she didn't have her deadweight sisters there this time. Anyway.
Okay. So Prue is running down some stairs and the demon chases her. She gets into the basement warehouse of Buckland's and hides behind a crate. In record fucking time, Piper arrives at Prue's office. Like, is it next door to their house? Like, how can you get anywhere that fast in San Francisco? I don't buy it. It takes me like 10 minutes just to get to Culver's. Okay, and I'm not even trying to save somebody's life. So Piper sees the struggle in Prue's office because she, like, threw her fucking desk across the room. And she's like, well, I better keep looking.
This is serious. While all of this is sort of, like, simultaneously happening, and as we know, Charmed and their concept of time is a little askew, except for when they have to do 24-hour spells, of course. But and this is the scene where we discovered that the vaccine is against the anti-vaxxer, which makes sense of why he doesn't want to dab in. But Piper shows up in the nick of time and freezes the anti-vaxxer as he's, like, choking Prue. And this scene is actually, like, kind of scary when he, like, grabs her and, like, picks her up. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
I watched it and I was physically uncomfortable.
It is. It does suck, but you kind of, like, watch Prue just, like, stand there and not throw him across the room, even though she's...
Yeah, why didn't she use her power?
Yeah, I was like, why? But, okay. I guess Prue really wanted to be...
I mean, she has done a lot of ass-kicking in the last few episodes.
Yeah. So maybe she's just, like, tired.
Like, Can we maybe do something? And so, now that he's frozen... They find a random crowbar. Where did that come from?
I mean, it's a warehouse full of crates. So.
And they fight over who gets to, like, hit him with the crowbar.
Who has to hit him with the crowbar. See, because neither of them want
And that was, like, a Freudian slip on my part, because I would love to hit this guy with a crowbar.
Yeah. For sure. The thing about this scene is when they're both just like, ew, no, I don't want to do it, ew. It's sort of like, it's kind of like a wimpy, girly kind of thing that didn't really make sense. with them, because Prue has proven in the previous episodes that she has no problem with violence.
Right?
Whatsoever.
But eventually they both get to stab him in the third eye with the crowbar, and then he falls to the ground and dies, and then a butthole comes down from the sky and sucks his body away, presumably back to the future.
It's not just like a regular butthole. It's more like if the cartoon Genie from Aladdin.
Yes! That's exactly it. If Genie had a butthole, it would be this.
All right. So they killed the bad guy. Yay. So because she's on the clock, you know, she can't even, like, unwind from this battle where she almost got killed. So Prue, like, goes to wait outside Andy's apartment. And he gets home, and she's like, we have to talk, like, right fucking now. And Andy wants her to go in, and Prue is like, I literally don't have time for your bullshit. Like, just tell me if you're cool with me being a witch. And Andy says, I guess there's nothing wrong with it, but I just can't be with you. And then the clock strikes, and Andy completely forgets everything they were talking about.
This scene is gut-wrenching, honestly. Shannon Doherty's delivery of the lines was beautiful. The sort of, like, back and forth between the two of them that was, like, so raw and emotional. And honestly, the lines themselves felt a little too much like they were trying to force it to be prolific. But the way that they both said them and delivered the scene was lovely. And I would, like, these are the kind of scenes that I, like, yearn for as an actor, to be able to, like, invest and be emotional and vulnerable with another person in that way. It was just lovely. It was lovely.
Yeah. It was delivered very well, definitely. And, I mean, it's the unfortunate outcome that a lot of coming out stories have, wherein he did ultimately reject her. And what happens next is she acts like she's fine. She walks around the corner, leans against the wall, and starts to cry. And watching Shannon Doherty cry sucks.
It really sucks.
Because you don't even think that she should be capable. Aside from the emotional stuff, though, let's talk about this whole aspect of forgetting that comes with the truth spell. Now, obviously, Prue and Piper and Phoebe have done solved the crime and sent the villain back to the future. But in the process, they made a police officer completely forget the investigation he was working on that happened to be a homicide. You know what I'm saying?
Shit.
I mean, it's all okay because he's dead, but, you know, who else knows that? You know? And, like, what other investigations could he have been working on that he completely forgot?
Oh my god. I guess I didn't think about that. I guess I just assumed that it was like he just wouldn't remember the things that he said under the truth spell, but there was no, like, inclusion of that whatsoever in the recitation of the spell.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, she asked him, know. You don't remember the last 24 hours? And he's like, no, I guess I don't, but I'm cool with it.
And still can't figure out that she's a witch.
Right?
In the next scene, Piper and Phoebe are having dinner at Quake, even though Piper just quit. And Phoebe announces that the spell is over. And Martin walks over and tells Piper to get to work. And they say some stuff that doesn't make sense about truth and consequences and the Wiccan rule.
It was, like, it was babble.
It really was. It's another instance of, like, buzzwords.
Yeah.
We haven't said the W word yet in this episode, other than... we haven't said Wicca. We've said witch too many times.
Yeah, so we better bastardize Wicca real quick.
Yeah, let's just, like, fuck all this up real fast. And Piper's like, whatever, I'm gonna go yell at Martin. And then Piper tells him off and tells him to hire some more people, or she's gonna quit, and he's, like, a douchebag, and is like, all you had to do was ask, even though there was no indication that she could have asked him anything. And she's like, it's my night off, so you can just go fuck off.
Meanwhile, I'm gonna sit here and eat in front of you.
Leo is there to apologize to Piper, but he doesn't know why. And she's like, no, you're good. let's go have a drink, aka let's go make out in the corner.
Or drink or whatever. Yeah. I don't know how dating works. All right, so it's the last scene. Prue shows up at Quake, and she's still, of course, really broken up about everything that just happened. And she tells Phoebe that it didn't work out, but at least now she has her answer. And they hug, and...
I love what Prue says when she says she cast a spell for an answer and she got one, even if it wasn't the one that she wanted. Because I feel like that's very akin to how magic and, in my mind, the tarot works. You know, like sometimes what you think is going to happen or what you think you want is not what's going to be best for you long term. And I just feel like that was very, it was very realistic to me of how this would have played out,
yeah,
I think.
For sure.
We experienced a lot of deaths today. If I were going to have to pick a favorite for kill of the day, I guess maybe my kill of the day is dial-up internet. Thank God that's gone.
For sure. My kill of the day would have to be the reigning champion for the second episode in a row, Prue and Andy's relationship. Girl, bye.
Yes. Kill of the day. If I were going to rate this episode, I would give it 3 eyes and 1 sky butthole.
Well, it's pretty hard to top. It's like you just described the perfect man. if I had to rate this episode, I would probably give it something like 1 out of 10 lies that you weren't supposed to be able to tell.
Oh, that's great.
So, now that we've just finished the first 8 episodes of Charmed, we're going to be taking a little break from this series to branch out into some other topics, which we're really excited about. Our next episode will be dedicated to the 2015 horror film The Witch, which I know y'all are going to love. After that, we'll be covering the 2006 homoerotic fantasy thriller The Covenant, one of the only films to focus on
male witches. I'm so excited for that one.
By the way.
I'm so excited for that.
Me too. We're going to make it even gayer.
I mean, that movie makes me horny. So I'm excited to talk about it.
You know what doesn't, though? But maybe you'll at least get to crush on somebody who's not Andy Trudeau. And after that, the episode that I am most excited about, we're going to be taking some time to examine Supernatural's iconic villain-turned-shero, Rowena McLeod.
Siren, where can the people find you?
Oh, hey girl, hey. You can follow my meme page on Facebook, Siren Spectacular, non-binary meme witch. You can also follow me on Twitter at Siren Spectacular. And finally, you can watch my coven's YouTube channel, Millennial Incantations.
Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at a new handle, fire_made_flesh. That's going to be Phoenix Arcana Lightwood. You can follow the podcast at WBRcast across the board. If you have a question or something you'd like to hear us talk about, please feel free to send us an email at witchbereview@gmail.com.
All right, you three-eyed anti-vaxxer warlocks.
Until next time, keep on witching.
And bitching. Bye.
Bye.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?